It's time for us to begin this evening. This is Wednesday, November the 17th. We're on the life of Samuel. We left off last week with 1 Samuel chapter 8, where the people had said that they wanted a king. And so Samuel went about and told them. He protested solemnly with them, which meant that he really endeavored to teach them and to tell them of the type of a king that they would have, that it wasn't going to be something very nice, what all the king was going to do, the people that he was going to take and what he was going to do with them, the land he was going to take and everything else, and the crops and all this and that. And after he had told them, the people still said, well, yeah, we still want a king. We want a king. And the reason that they wanted a king was so that they could be like the other nations round about them. And to understand why the Lord chose Saul to be the first king, the foreknowledge of God is God knows everything in the future. He knows everything that's going to take place. And God knew that Saul was going to have some problems in obedience and so forth. God knew that. But yet, when you look at the people wanted a king, and Saul was very fitting for the first one based upon the concept that the people had that they wanted a king like the other nations. The people were looking more toward the physical than they were for the spiritual. When you remember that when all the sons of Jesse went before Samuel, and God said, nope, not that one. And they finally got down to David. And God said, that's the one. And it was from the standpoint that God said, I look upon the heart, not upon the outward appearance. But this first one, the people wanted an outward appearance of a king. They wanted one that would dazzle and razzle just like the other kings in the world. And they wanted one that would be a standout that you could see, you could realize, and boy, that's a king. He's our king. And you see this in chapter 9. In the first two verses, first of all, Saul came from a wealthy family. So you can, when you think of kings and so forth, you think of royalty. So here was a wealthy family that he was from. And it also said in verse 2 that Kish had a choice and handsome son. And with this, of course, there you're again looking at the physical appearance. And it was such a physical appearance. I think the King James says goodly, and that's not to be confused with, well, he was good morally or good spiritually or whatever. That goodly there, when you look at it, in the definition of it, it has to do with the appearance. It has to do with beauty, appearance, the outward structure. So it said that he had a choice and handsome son. His name was Saul. And there was not a more handsome person than he among the children of Israel. So when you're thinking that they want a king like all the rest of the nations, they wanted one that was going to stand out in the presence of their appearance. They wanted one that's going to look like a king and like all the rest of the nations. So the reason God chose Saul is because he fit in that category of what the people wanted. And that's what they wanted. They wanted something from a physical aspect on that. When you look at chapter 10 and verse 24, again, Samuel said to all the people, do you see him whom the Lord has chosen? That there is no one like him among all the people. So again, Saul stood out head above shoulders above everybody else. So he was easily noticed, easily seen. So again, the emphasis that the people wanted was that when you see a king sitting on a hilltop and you're in battle and he's all dressed up and everything, you're going to notice him. He's going to be a king. And he's going to be the one leading. And it's going to be his appearance that the people are going to be gravitating to, looking at. And for some reason, I guess the more appearance they had in how they looked, maybe they thought the better they were going to win. I don't know. But when you wonder why did God choose Saul? I think it's from the physical standpoint. That's what the people were looking for. They wanted a king, not based on spiritualness, but they wanted one based upon physicalness, the physical appearance, like the other nations. And that's what God gave them. And that was in Saul because of his looks and so forth. So Kish was a man of wealth with that. And his donkeys became lost, we see in verse 3. And so he sends his son Saul and the servant to go hunt for the donkeys. And so they go out to look for them in verse 4. And they go through all these places and they can't find them. And after they spend some time doing this, Saul tells his servant, well, we need to return home. We need to go home due to the time that we spent looking, and that Dad's going to become worried about us instead of the donkeys. In verse 5, and he said his concern now is going to be not so much for the donkeys, but we've been gone so long, he's going to be worried about us. And the servant knows of a man of God in this area that they're in, and he suggests that they go to the man of God in the nearby city, that everything that this man of God says comes to pass. There's nothing that does not come to pass. And of course, we know before we had read that every word that Samuel said was established by God. So he was established as a prophet. We also see terminology here that the servant and Saul kind of referred to him as a seer. And that is just one that knows, along with a prophet, so forth, that we can go to him. And maybe Saul said, well, you know, maybe we can go to him. He might know. And so the servant, you know, is encouraging Saul in that respect. Let's not go back and leave yet, but let's try this man of God and see if he can tell us where the donkeys are before we head back, since we're already here. And that's in verse 6. In verses 7 and 8, Saul says, well, what can we give the man, this man of God? We need to give him something for, you know, for his trouble or for his service or whatever. And I don't think it was from the standpoint that Saul did this so that he could receive income. It was just that this was something in gratitude that Saul was going to give. And so they look around and they look for a present to give him. And he said, well, we don't have any bread to give him. The bread in our vessels is gone and there's no present to bring to him. And servants said, well, I've got a fourth of a shekel of silver and we can give that to him. And he can tell us which way we need to go and where we can find the donkeys. So they had the faith in this man of God that he could tell them where they needed to go to find the lost donkeys. So they go ahead and decide, Saul and the servant go ahead and decide that they go to proceed to the city of where the man of God was in verse 10. So they decide to go, and as they're going up the hill to the city, they meet some women. In verse 11, going out to draw water, and they, of course, they ask, you know, is the seer here? And the answer that they give back is, yes, he's here, just ahead of you. He's up there, and you better hurry, because today he's come to this city because there's a sacrifice of the people today on the high place. So we see the providence of God working here, that as Saul and his servant end up in this city, they come to this city at the same time that, you know, that Samuel appears at this city. So you see the working of God bringing the two together. Now, it's interesting to note, and when you jump down in verse 15, that the day before Saul came to the city, the Lord told Samuel in his ear the day before Saul comes, saying, tomorrow, about this time, Samuel, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin, and you shall anoint him commander over my people, Israel, that he may save my people from the hand of Philistines. For I have looked upon my people because their cry has come to me. It's interesting that the people cry that they want a king. And God says, Samuel, they didn't reject you, they rejected me. And Samuel even goes about telling them to put away their false gods and turn back to God and repent. But here is God's attitude still toward his people, that the Philistines are always coming at them and oppressing them, always fighting against them. And he says, I've looked upon my people because their cry has come to me. Whenever the Philistines came around, the people panicked. The people of Israel just panicked. and they were afraid of them. And, of course, the Philistines kind of just was the neighborhood bully, so to speak. They beat up on them. And so, you know, God hears their cry. Even though they had still transgressed against Him, God was still caring for His people because they heard His cry and said, here's this man that's going to come. And you're gonna see him tomorrow, and he's the one I'm gonna put over the people, and he's gonna lead them, so that they could have deliverance from the Philistines. So he had come to Samuel the day before and told him that, and the reason stated was that he looked upon his people because their cry came up before him, and that again shows God's compassion for his people. He wasn't so quick to cast them off. But he still cared for his people. Saul and his servant, they come into the city. They inquire concerning him and is told that where they could find him. And as Saul and his servant were fixing to meet, the Lord tells Samuel that there he is. There's the man that I told you about in verse 17. They go in there. So when Samuel saw Saul, the Lord said to him, there he is, the man whom I spoke to you. This one shall reign over my people. And so it's pointed out to Saul in verse 17 who Samuel was and the one that he was going to anoint as king. Saul draws nigh to Samuel, and he doesn't know who he is, and he says, tell me, where can I find the seer's house? And Samuel answered Saul and said, you know, I'm the seer. Go up before me to the high place, for you shall eat with me today. And tomorrow I'll let you go, and I will tell you all that is in your heart. Anything you want to know, I'm going to tell you, you know, what you're wanting to know. And then in verse 20, just to kind of to tell Saul, yeah, I'm a seer. I know more than what you think. He's kind of a little specific here. He didn't say, well, your donkeys that you're looking for, you know, don't be anxious for them. But he's specific. He says, but as for your donkeys that were lost 3 days ago, you know, 3 days ago you lost them, do not be anxious about them, for they have been found. And then he throws out a statement to Saul, which I think we see the humility a little bit with Saul, even though he may get a little bit of a bad thought about him because of all the transgressions that he did. But Saul was humble in the very beginning. Samuel says, and on whom is all the desire of Israel, as he's looking toward Saul? Is it not on you and all your father's house? And Saul's like, what? Because Samuel's saying, the whole desire of Israel is upon you and upon your house. And he's like, why? What are you talking about? How come? I'm just a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family, the least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin. Why are you talking to me like this? But the desire of all Israel was for a king. And God is going to anoint Saul as the first king. He's chosen Saul to be the first king. So that's why Israel's desire was upon Saul and upon his household. But you see the humility here as they're conversing back and forth. And you see Saul, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. He was humble in it. And he was, you know, I'm just from a lowly family. That's all I'm from. Why would all of Israel be wanting me on that? So Samuel takes Saul and his servant, and he brought them into the hall in verse 22 and had them sit in the place of honor. And when you think about that, here's Saul again. Now he's being put in the place of honor after he's being took aback by the statement from Samuel and says, why are you saying these things to me? And then they go up to eat in the hall, and Samuel says, Saul, you and your servant come here in this place of honor. This is where you're going to sit. And before that, also, Samuel had told the cook there's a certain portion that he had told him the day before or time before that he was to set back and keep it put back. because Samuel knew that this was going to be the special portion for Saul, the anointed king. Samuel said to the cook, "Bring the portion which I gave you, of which I said to you, set it apart." Verse 23. So the cook took up the thigh with its upper part and set it before Saul. And Samuel said, "Here it is, what was kept back. It was set apart for you. Eat. For until this time it has been kept for you since I said I invited the people." So here's Saul getting all the honor and in this high esteem, and he has no clue why it's being done. He still doesn't have a clue. All he knows is the seer said, "The donkeys that you were worried about that were lost 3 days ago, you know, don't worry about them. They've been found. I'll explain everything to you. I'll tell you." The next day, in preparation for Saul to leave, Samuel calls Saul, and he takes him aside in verses 25 through 27 to tell him what the word of the Lord is. And this was after he had took him down from the high place into the city, and they were on top of the house, and they'd slept that night, and arose early the next morning. And it was about the dawning of the day that Samuel called to Saul on top of the house, saying, "Get up, that I may send you on your way." And so they both went outside. And in verse 27, Samuel tells Saul, "Send your servant on ahead. Go ahead and send him ahead." So they're going down to the outskirts of the city. Samuel said to Saul, "Tell him to go on ahead of us." And he went on. And he says, "But you stand here a while, that I may announce to you the word of God." And so this is what Samuel is going to tell him. So it's all appointed up to this point in time now. Samuel and Saul meet. All of it's under the direction of God. And then Samuel, chapter 10, took a flask of oil and poured it on his head and kissed him. And I'm sure with this going on, Saul's probably still wondering, what in the world has happened? First he tells me all this, and I eat, and I'm in a high place with him, and in high regard, and then he pours oil on my head, and he kisses me, and finally Samuel tells him, "Is it not because the Lord has anointed you commander over his inheritance?" It's an interesting thought here when you think about it, that even though the people had rebelled against God, even though they went against him, how God still looked at his people in the way that Samuel referred to him. That God has anointed you commander over his inheritance. They were God's inheritance. God was still going to take care of them, no matter what. Even though they went against him, they were still God's inheritance. Today, we as Christians are God's inheritance. And he's going to watch over us. He's going to take care of us. And the king that he has set over us is not Saul, it's not David, but it's his son, Jesus Christ. And that's the king he has set over us. And that king is not only a spiritual king, but he can take care of us in anything. He's our rock. He's our salvation. No matter what problems we encounter, no matter what's going on, no matter what we face, that king will fight for us. He'll fight for us. We can be victorious. We can be more than conquerors through him. And that's what we have with the spiritual side. So there's a lot to being of the inheritance of God. So after anointing him, and he's going to deliver, he tells them, you know, he's going to deliver. You're going to deliver the Lord's people from the hands of all the enemies all around them. When you look at verse 9, 16, chapter 9 and verse 16, it says he's going to, you know, he's going to be the deliverer. He's going to deliver my people from the hand of the Philistines. He's going to be the commander over them on that. And then he goes ahead and tells him the lesser thing. You know, when you have departed from me today, here's the specifics. You will find two men by Rachel's tomb in the territory of Benjamin at Zelda. And when you think about this, you're not going to find men. You're going to find two men. They're going to be at Rachel's tomb in exactly the territory of Benjamin. And they are going to say this to you: the donkeys which you went to look for have been found, and now your father has ceased caring about the donkeys and is worrying about you, saying, what shall I do about my son? And Saul, then you're going to go on forward, and from there, and you're going to come to the terebinth tree of Tabor. How specific can you still get? It's not going to be any tree. It's not going to be any field. You're going to come to the terebinth tree of Tabor, and there three men are going up to God at Bethel. They're going to meet you, and one carrying three young goats, another carrying three loaves of bread, and another carrying a skin of wine. You're just not going to meet three men, but here's the specifics. And how can Samuel, when you consider Samuel saying this, there's the Word of God in him. This is what, you're going to meet these people. And they're going to greet you, and they're going to give you two loaves of bread, which you're going to receive from their hands. And after that, you shall come to the hill of God where the Philistine garrison is. And it will happen when you come there to that city that you will meet a group of prophets coming down from the high place with a stringed instrument, a tambourine, a flute, and a harp before them, and they will be prophesying. And then, Saul, the Spirit of the Lord is going to come upon you, and you will prophesy with them and be turned into another man. Now, there's a lot of specifics there that Samuel is telling Saul. This is going to come about. And every bit of it is going to come about because the Lord has established Samuel that none of his words fails. But yet he's being specific that Saul, God's anointed you as a commander. You're going to be the king. And here's the sign. And it's specific. So when all this happens, Saul's going to think back and say, well, it's exactly like he told me. So I am going to be anointed as the king. So then verse 7, he says, and let it be when these signs come to you. When these signs come to you, here's the signs when they come to you, that you do as the occasion demands, for God is with you. So he tells them that the signs will confirm that the Lord has anointed Saul to be a prince or a king. And when it says do as the occasion demands, it's talking about when the situations arise, that God would be with him. God wouldn't be with him when he did the things wrong. But in the battles that he had to face, in the things that he had to do, God would be with him. And we'll see in the first, not the first, but the second occurrence of it. In the second occurrence, when this happens, he had lost some of that trust in God. He'd let it waver a little bit. And we'll see that when we get to that point. But he lets it waver. But here Samuel's saying, God is with you. Saul, I told you all these signs, and they're going to come about. And I'm telling you also that God's going to be with you to do as the occasion demands. God's going to be with you. If all these other signs come true, then why could not Saul accept, yes, God's going to be with me? And then we see how things end up. He messes up several times. And then there's a different spirit that comes upon him, and he turns against David. He's a totally different man than when he started out. Saul completely does 180. Here we see his character. He's humble. He's dependent upon the Lord. And then you look at the end, and he's chasing David down, going to kill him out of jealousy because David's going to be the next king, and Saul doesn't like that, and he's just mad about it and everything else. So you kind of see quite a bit of a swing. And in all this, you've got poor Samuel. He's kind of in the middle of it on that. So this sign that Samuel tells Saul is very specific, and it would convince Saul that God had chosen him to be Israel's king. And he says, Samuel tells Saul after these signs, Saul is to go to Gilgal, and that Saul is to wait 7 days. And Samuel would come to offer sacrifices and would tell Saul what to do. In verse 8, you go down before me to Gilgal, and surely I will come down to you. Surely I will come down to you. to offer burnt offerings and make sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days you shall wait till I come to you and show you what you should do. How would you take that? When he says Samuel has told him all this, and then Saul runs into these signs and all these signs come about, and then, you know, Samuel told me to wait 7 days and he's going to come, then how would you take that? Well, 7 days, Samuel's going to come. You know, hang in there. 7 days, Samuel's going to come. Because everything else comes to pass. Okay? But he tells him, you go down there and you do that. We find that as Saul leaves, the Lord gives Saul another heart. In verse 9, and the signs come to pass that day. It's not over a period of time. It's not 3 or 4 days. They came to pass that day when he went back. We find now Samuel calling the people together at Mizpah. And he's telling them what the Lord had done and how they had rejected the Lord, and instructs the people to present themselves before the Lord by their tribes and their families. In verses 17 through 19. He tells them, you know, I brought you the children of Israel. Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up Israel out of Egypt, delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians, from the hand of the kingdoms, and from those who oppressed you. God has done His part. He's brought them out of every battle. But you have today rejected your God, who also saved you from all your adversaries and your tribulations. And you have said to Him, nope, set a king over us. Now therefore, present yourselves before the Lord by your tribes and by your clans. He's kind of harsh with them. When you stop and think about, you know, God, you're worried about these Philistines. You're worried about the Ammonites. You're worried about all these people that come against you. And God is, look what God has delivered you out of up till now. And you've not had a bit of problem. God has delivered you out of it, but you still say, no, we want a king. We want someone that we can see, that we can set our eyes on, that we can look at and say, that's where we're going to focus. That person right there is going to do it for us instead of upon the Lord. So they present themselves. All the tribes of Israel come near. He chooses Benjamin. He calls the tribe of Benjamin to come near by the families. Matri comes and is chosen, and Saul, the son of Kish, is chosen. And they can't find him. All the people are there and they can't find him. He goes through all this and where's Saul? And so the people are inquiring, has the man come here yet? You know, you went through all this and you haven't found him. Well, where's he at? Where's he at? And the Lord answered and said, there he is hiding among the equipment. What was Saul doing hiding among the equipment? Don't know. But he's brought forward, and the people proclaimed Saul as their king. They ran and brought him up from there, and when he stood among the people, he was taller than any of the people from his shoulders upward. And all the people shouted and said, long live the king. And then, here's the downside of it. They were all excited, but then Samuel explains to them, hey, remember what I told you before? You know, he explained to the people the behavior of royalty, and he wrote it in a book. And he laid it up before the people. And, you know, this is going to be the testimony against you. And Samuel sent all the people away, every man to his house. And what's interesting to note, that as Saul leaves also and goes to Gibeah, that the valiant men went with him whose hearts God had touched. That were going to be with Saul. But there were some in verse 27 that said, how can this man save us? So they despised him and brought him no presents, but he held his peace. We'll see when the Ammonites come and the dealing with Jabesh-Gilead in chapter 11, that when they become victorious, the people come back to this and say, hey, Saul, you delivered us. What are you going to do to these people over here that said they didn't want you as king? What are you going to do to them? Let's put them to death. They need to die. You know, because they weren't going to stand with you. And again, you'll see the attitude we will next time with the attitude of Saul in chapter 11 and verses 13, 12 and 13. His attitude, again, a humbleness and his attitude of forgiveness that he had for them. And it's still, again, totally different than how he was with David. Totally different. Totally different. So that's where we're up to, that he's been anointed king. We'll see some solidification in chapter 11 with Samuel and Saul working together. And then it kind of starts to go downhill from there. Any question or comments? Okay, thank you.